live from the Oxygen Community Studios. We are the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Happy Wednesday to you. Thanks for hanging out with us. Yesterday, we had a couple of times some really, I thought, good conversation, not just surface level type stuff, but we really kind of dug deep into Cliff Kingsbury and this phrase that is used often when talking about Cliff going into year three of his tenure with the Arizona Cardinals: playoffs or bust, playoffs or bust, playoffs or bust. And like a lot of things in life, man, it's a black and white conversation. Yeah, if they get in, he's safe, and if they don't, he's out. Things in life are very rarely that black and white. There's shades of gray. There's nuance. There's, well, what about this? What about that? What if this happens? What if that happens? And I think what happened is partially because we've got a promo playing of some of our conversation about that. I do think a couple of the other shows today kind of picked up on our playoffs or bust conversation about Cliff yesterday. So we kind of thought we'd circle back to it, because we've got another way, Gambo, in which some nuance might be put in this conversation.
Well, I think, you know, Bickley and Murata were talking about, you know, the promo where I said, well, what if they had just won one more game last year? Would Cliff be on the hot seat? If they had won one more game, Cliff Kingsbury wouldn't be considered on the hot seat. He'd be a coach that took the Cardinals to the play, won nine games, took the Cardinals to the playoffs. So there would be no discussion of a guy in his second year that, you know, turned the Cardinals around and made the playoffs. After just 2 years earlier, they had won three games without him. So I that was my point, is that he wouldn't be on the hot seat if he had won one more game.
But he didn't. He didn't win one more game.
And that was Bickley's point. Bickley's point was, and listen, there's no right or wrong answer here, whether he's on the hot seat or not. I mean, it's, you know, there's, the season will tell. I mean, the season will tell whether he gets fired or he gets to keep his job. Now, we could debate what you have to do, for what he has to do to keep his job. Look, I'm all on board. If he wins 5 or 6 games, or he goes 7-10, it's very likely time for a change. Very likely time for a change. So I believe that. I think there's some gray area in what happens if they don't make the playoffs, but say they won 9 games, or even 10 games and lost out in a tiebreaker. I think there's some gray area there where he could miss the playoffs and still keep his job if they play well enough and the players do well and they just, you know, they just miss the playoffs on a tiebreaker or some fluky thing.
I'm a big believer in gray area. I'm a big believer that there are no absolutes, that there are no, that extremes, the reality lies in between the extremes. So by and large, I would agree with you for the most part. And I said this yesterday on the air. I said this in the promo that we're playing. For the most part, you tell me the Cardinals don't make the playoffs next year, I say Cliff Kingsbury's not their coach. All right. I acknowledge that within that, there is a lot of gray area and there's a lot of wiggle room and there's a lot of things that could happen that could influence that outcome. Thing number one is injuries, you know, in particular at some of the most vital positions they've got, the most vital position they've got. If something happens there, well, then that goes right out the window, right? I mean, if something happens at the quarterback position, that forget it.
Changes everything.
Changes everything. Yeah, changes the entire conversation
100%.
About Cliff. Okay, that's number one. Number two, we have to remember, I have to remember, that the Arizona Cardinals play in the toughest division in the NFL. And to back up that point, NFL.com, and you'll see a lot of these the closer we get to the season, NFL.com ranking the best divisions in football. The NFC West finished number one. The bottom line, they write, all of these teams, all four of them, could win at least 10 to 11 games, with three of them having the potential to reach the NFC Championship game. Of course, the three are the 49ers, the Rams, and the Seahawks. They don't mention the Cardinals as having the potential to reach the NFC Championship game. But to your point, you go 9-8. You're playing in that division with teams that might win 13 games, 12 games, and 10 games. And you finish with 9 wins, right? But you're going up against those teams and you're competitive against those teams. And the offense continues to get better. Is that enough progress against this division, this competition, for Cliff Kingsbury to earn another shot? It might be. It might very well be, because this is going to be so tough.
Especially if Kyler develops at a level to where he is Pro Bowl quarterback again, he breaks some records. I mean, I think that could be a case, too. Like, if he develops to the point where, wow, he's worthy of $40 million. Well, then you got to give Cliff credit for developing Kyler to the point where Kyler's going to make $40 million. So I just, like That's I true. Said, look, do I think that there are scenarios where this could be, you know, Cliff's last? Sure. Of course I do. I think if they have a bad year and that this team was set up to win, this roster is set up to win. So do I think that they are a playoff team? Yeah, I think they're a playoff team. If they don't make it, we should all be disappointed if they don't make the playoffs. But I think there's a big difference between going, you know, 7-10 or 6-11 compared to 9-8 and not making the playoffs. So that's why I think there's just a little bit of gray area there in which there is a scenario for me in which they can miss out on the playoffs and I wouldn't fire the guy.
Yeah, 9-8. And again, how you get there matters. How you do in the division matters. How Kyler does matter. I would agree with you that all matters. I think the other thing at play here doesn't have, unfortunately for Cliff, it doesn't have anything to do with Cliff. And I know it shouldn't be that he's judged on this, but like we said yesterday, when is it ever fair in NFL coaching, right? There's nothing fair about NFL coaches who get to keep or lose their jobs. Part of the microscope that Cliff is under, not only is not making the playoffs in his time here, they haven't made the playoffs since 2015. I mean, you're operating on 6 years now of no NFL playoffs. Is that Cliff's fault? God, no. Of course not. But
he wasn't here for most of those years.
But you know as well as I do, that's not always how this works. And for an organization that hasn't been in the playoffs as long as the Cardinals have, there is an anxiety to get back. There's an urgency to get back. There's an impatience to get back, especially in a league where it's fairly easy to get back in the playoffs, right? I mean, the way parity is built and scheduling and all that stuff, Cliff might, unfortunately for him, have to sort of bear the responsibility of an organization that didn't get to the playoffs the 3 years before he even got the job, because that impatience starts to set in, whether it's Cliff's fault or not, and he might have to pay the price for that.
Yeah, this team gets off to a bad start. Say they're 3-6 after 9 games.
Oh, it's...
And you're like, okay, there's 8 games left.
It's going to be weekly speculation.
Of course.
Weekly speculation.
Yeah, so I mean, if they're 3-6 with 8 games left, you're like, eesh. You'd have to win all 8 to get to 11.
Yeah.
You'd have to win 7 out of 8 to be in a playoff contention. That's probably not going to happen. Yeah. Then that speculation is there, and it's going to be justified as long as there's not any injuries.
Yeah, you know what's going to happen then. And we're going to start looking at bye weeks, and we're going to start looking at mini bye weeks, and we're going to start looking at, well, if you were going to do it, this would be a good week to do it because you've got the extra time, blah blah blah, to make the transition. I mean, this is not our first rodeo. Well, hopefully none of this comes to pass. But I agree with you. There's a lot of gray in here, and there's a lot of wiggle room in here. But I still think at the end of the day, if they don't, unless there's dramatic across-the-board improvement offensively from the way they finished last year, I think he could be in trouble. I think he will be in trouble when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
It's just, you know.
Like I said, it's a good conversation. I enjoyed Bickley and Morata's conversation. I think we all have our own opinions on this. And, you know, some people are black and white. Playoffs or fire the guy.
No,
and
right.
I've got a little bit of gray area in the middle, depending on what can happen.
And I'm not black or white either on this one, but I think I tend more towards the other than you do. When we come back, does Caleb Smith have a chance at winning his appeal for the use of a foreign subject? It depends if he's judged by the letter of the law or the spirit of the law. At least that's according to his agent. We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. I'm not going to say it's Jordan's fault.
I said that in confidence during a commercial break.
Oh,
Sarah Cazell put it in her last update.
I'm not going to say it's anybody's fault here on the show.
She put it out there in the ether.
But
15 minutes ago.
Whatever. Jordan about a half hour ago was like, hey, we really hadn't decided what we're going to talk about at 5:15. Not to break it to you or anything, but Tyler Gilbert's got a perfect game going through three right now. You want to talk about the Diamondbacks at 5:15? Sure. Let's talk about the Diamondbacks at 5:15. Yeah, there goes the perfect game.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Double off the wall.
That's okay.
Now it's runners at first and third. That's okay. Jordan, there's no...
Here's the thing. They don't have a run yet. You can't get swept by the Pirates.
No, you can't get swept by the Pirates.
Right? You can't get swept by the Pirates.
Yeah. Do you remember that day?
I mean, they're the Pirates.
Do you remember
Willie Stargell ain't walking through that door.
Do you remember that day where right after the Diamondbacks got J.D. Martinez, we took his first at-bat live, right? Because the game was over on 6:20. And you asked me during the commercial break if we should take the second at-bat live. I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? Let's take it live. And he got hurt.
Oh.
And he got hurt the second. And man, Twitter was my like Darth Vader for about an hour on me. Just I hated Twitter for about an hour because everybody, oh, it's your fault. It's your fault. If you hadn't taken that second at-bat live, it was your decision. You're the driver of the show.
Yep.
You made the choice to take the at-bat live.
Somebody to blame. There's got to be somebody to blame every single time.
I went to bed that night thinking, please don't let him be hurt. Please don't let him. I'll never hear the end of it from social media if
he was
he's
okay.
hurt. And he was fine. He ended up hitting 29 home runs in like 32 games with the Diamondbacks. Yeah. He ended up being great with him, but for about an hour there, I was, it was bad. It was bad stuff. Diamondbacks and Pirates are scoreless right now, and Tyler Gilbert was perfect through three, but he gave up a double, and now he's looking at runners at first and third with one out. And you're right, the Diamondbacks cannot get swept by the Pirates. They already dropped 2 of 3 to the Rockies. Their offense has been a complete no-show in this series against Pittsburgh. Torrey Lovello's talking about being as frustrated now as he has at any point in time during the season, which is remarkable. Given that this year the Diamondbacks have had a 13-game losing streak, a 17-game losing streak, and a 24-game road losing streak. And this is the most frustrated you've been all year because you've lost four of your last five against the Pirates and the Rockies. But yeah, Torrey's frustrated with how they're playing right now.
Listen, I think that Torrey, there's two things to look at. You want to be competitive. You want to win games. You gotta play to win, right? You don't want a losing, because we've seen it, right? We know what it's like with organizations, right? The Suns, that losing environment, that culture, like it's the, once that seeps in, man, it's hard.
It's hard to get it out.
It's hard to get it out.
It's like a stain in the carpet. Yeah.
Man, it's hard to get it out. You become accustomed to losing. I mean, the Coyotes are going to go through this. I worry about that, you know, they're going to tank for a number of years here. But, you know, what does that do for a guy like Jacob Chychrun? What does that do for the younger guys? So you always have to worry about that environment, that culture of losing. Sometimes an organization, hey, we got to lose for a few years because we need the draft picks. We're going to do it the right way. This is the only way to do it. Okay, that's great. But the guys on the team that are losing every day, man, that wears on you. It wears on you. So I understand Torrey's point there. But the other thing you got to look at is this has been a golden opportunity for them to play Dalton Varsho and to play Paven Smith and to play Josh Rojas. And you know what?
These guys are pretty good.
You got some players that can play in the major leagues. Yeah. Congratulations. You know, I still think you got to get rid of Ahmed. You got to get rid of Peralta, and you've got to, you know, find other players. And, you know, with Bumgarner pitching well, and you've got Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly, you'll have a decent rotation next year to be competitive. But you are finding out that some of these young players that you've been giving time to are actually pretty good.
But if Torrey brings that up in the post game yesterday, and says, hey, you know what? I know we lost, but man, I'm so excited about Josh Rojas. I'm so excited about Paven Smith.
People take it the wrong way.
Oh, people go, everyone's going to take it the wrong way. Everyone's going to be like, you're happy with losing. You're satisfied with losing. So he can't, to your original point, you can't give off the vibe of being happy with losing. You can't give off the vibe of being okay with losing. And so Torrey's got to, because you're trying to maintain, if not winning baseball, at least a culture that doesn't tolerate losing. And talking about how bright the future is a culture that tolerates losing all dressed up, you know, and so Torrey can't do that. Torrey's going to lose his job if he does that, right? Torrey's going to lose his job if he gives off the vibe of, oh, yeah, man, it doesn't matter that we win or lost.
He can lose his job anyway.
Well,
I don't know what's going to happen to Torrey. I mean,
you're absolutely right. I'm just saying that's a quicker path to him losing his job if he comes off at the end of these games like he's cool with losing because Rojas is developing and Paven Smith are developing. The Caleb Smith situation took a little bit of an interesting turn thanks to the reporting of Zach Buchanan over The Athletic. He had a conversation with Caleb Smith's agent. Now, Caleb Smith, he of the 10-game suspension, and now he's appealing it because he had the sticky stuff in his glove. Caleb Smith isn't talking, but the agent is. And the agent is pointing to a rule book that is really does not leave a lot of room for, you know, black and white. It's very black and white. There's not a lot of room for gray. There's not a lot of wiggle room in here. A pitcher has the rosin bag on the mound.
Yes.
And can use the rosin bag whenever they want to allow them to grip the baseball better, right? But what they can't do is put the rosin from the bag onto the glove, all right? And what the agent is basically saying, and I'll just quote him here because he says it better than I can. Quote, if a player were to grab a rosin bag with his bare hand, which is on the back of the mound and accepted by players, umpires, fans, everybody for as long as the game has been around, and that same player were to touch a baseball immediately after touching the rosin bag, everyone says that's fair. That's fine. But if the same rosin bag touches a player's hat, belt, glove, or anything, that same exact substance is now deemed a foreign substance. And now we're at close quote, by the way. And now we're looking at how basically Caleb Smith is going to defend himself and how Torrey is going to defend likely Caleb Smith. Hey, it was the rosin. It was the rosin bag. And somehow the rosin got from his hand into his glove. And how is that not supposed to happen when you're out there pitching in these games?
Okay, but to that point, why have I not heard from one other major league pitcher that says, hey, listen, that's commonplace. Like, that's, you know, that happens all the time. We end up with the rosin in our gloves. I mean, I need to, you know, there are five starting pitchers and eight bullpen guys on every rot. Like, why haven't all of these players come to Caleb Smith's defense? If this is the argument that, hey, it's almost impossible not to get the rosin on the glove, why have I heard from another? Why isn't Zach Allen or Madison Bumgarner? Why isn't Madison Bumgarner say, listen, I mean, this is ridiculous. Here's Madison Bumgarner. You're paying him a lot of money. Like, why doesn't he step up and say, in his press conference after the game yesterday, Madison Bumgarner, hey, I just want to say what's happening to Caleb Smith is wrong. It's almost impossible to not get rosin on your glove. Every time I pick up the rosin bag, I know there's some kind of transfer to the glove. What they're doing to him is completely wrong. Why haven't I heard that?
I don't know. I don't have an answer to that question.
Because
I have no answer to your question.
But that should happen. That should happen.
Well, let's wait and see if it does. It hasn't happened yet. I mean, this story literally just came out about 6 hours ago.
Bumgarner pitched yesterday. By the time he pitched, they knew that he was suspended. Caleb Smith was suspended. Major League Baseball upheld the suspension.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't Madison Bumgarner after the game say something about it if he believes what Caleb Smith is and his agent is selling us?
I don't know.
I know you don't know, but I'm just advocating for that point. Like, you've got a veteran who's won three World Series and, like,
it's fair.
Okay, you should be the guy then, Madison Bumgarner. If you believe that this is commonplace in baseball, that it's almost impossible not to get the rosin on your glove, well, then say something.
Yeah. I know I don't know the answer to that question, and I understand that the point you're trying to make at this, I think part of the reason why, and I hate to be cold about this, we're just talking about Caleb Smith here. If this were Max Scherzer who had done this, if this were Jacob deGrom who had done this, I bet this is an entirely different conversation. And I bet this is getting a whole lot more attention. And I bet a lot of people are saying exactly what you want people to say about Caleb Smith. But because he's not as high profile a player as some of those other guys, that's part of the reason why there's not a lot of conversation about it. I mean, nationally across baseball, is it really that big of a deal that Caleb Smith got suspended for 10 games?
No, but guys on your own team?
Yeah, that's...
I mean, especially if you believe him.
Yeah.
If you believe him and you think that he got wrong, stick up for him.
Yeah.
Say something. Come to his defense.
Yep. It's fair.
He's a teammate. Come to his defense.
Again, because it just happened. I mean, the story itself is not even 24 hours old, or it's barely 24 hours old. I'm going to give him a little bit of wiggle room to give him some time if they do want to defend him. But if they don't, if we go a whole week and nothing is said by Mad Bum or Zach Gallen to defend their teammate, then I will be curious as to whether that's a legitimate excuse or not.
Yes.
Yeah, I would buy that.
Yes.
If we don't hear from those guys.
I'm going to be looking for that to see if that happens.
1-0 right now. The Pirates did push a run across. I don't know how they did it, though. How do they do
Sack
it?
Fly.
Sack fly.
How are we supposed to watch the game when we're trying to talk?
We're not.
Oh, that's right.
But Jordan can.
But Jordan did. There you go. All right, just making sure.
Do I have to explain to you how this whole radio thing works?
No, I get it.
There's nothing I'm not watching the game, but Jordan is, and we've got Jordan and Sarah for stuff like that. That's why Sarah's parents are so proud of her. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, it's the last chance for Kyler Murray to get some game action before the start of the regular season. Should the Cardinals have him play a little bit Saturday night against the Saints? We'll talk about it coming up on the Burns and Gambo show. Cliff Kingsbury was asked about it again today, and again today he did not provide a ton of clarity about his starters and whether they're going to play in the preseason finale on Saturday against the Saints.
I'm not sure yet. We'll know after tomorrow's practice and decide, you know, what's best for us.
But again, based off of Cliff's answer, was it yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday. When does Kyler need to play in another preseason game? No.
No.
No. No, he does not need to play in another preseason game. That was kind of the indicator that Kyler's probably not going to play in this preseason finale. And then on top of all that, longtime NFL writer Howard Balzer penned a piece for SportsIllustrated.com in which he said, man, the Cardinals are nuts if they think that there is anything at all to gain from having Kyler Murray take six snaps against the New Orleans Saints on Saturday afternoon, that it's going to mean anything at all when it comes to the regular season and how Kyler's going to play.
Leading snap taker in the preseason for Atlanta, Felipe Franks. For Baltimore, it's Tyler Huntley. For Buffalo, it's Mitchell Trubisky. For Carolina, it's Will Greer. For Cleveland, it's Kyle Laletta. For Dallas, it's Ben DiNucci. For Detroit, it's David Blah. For Green Bay, it's Kurt Benkert. For Houston, it's David Mills. For Indianapolis, it's Jacob Eason. For Las Vegas, it's Nathan Peterman. For the Chargers, it's Easton Stick. For the Rams, it's Bryce Perkins. Do I need to go on?
No, you know.
I don't need to go on.
No, you don't need to go on.
The moral of the story is there's only like four quarterbacks that are going to be starters that are getting the most reps for their team. Okay? Just four. And one of them was Patrick Mahomes because Andy Reeves likes to play as starters. The other one is Miami with Tua because they need to get him work. Now, you could say that Kyler needs to get work, but a lot of these teams err on the side of caution, and I don't want their starting quarterback getting hurt in a meaningless preseason game, which is going to go out there and play two series, maybe three, and then they get him the hell out of there. So I just can't wait for this to be over I can't wait for this to be over with the asking Cliff if Kyler's going to play.
Yeah, no, I can't wait for it to be over either, just because I really think at the end of the day, it just doesn't matter that much. Now, it's funny. We teased that we were going to be talking about Kyler, and then we played the Doug and Wolf promo, and Wolf must have said at some point on the air today, man, if I'm Kyler, I'm going to Cliff and I want to play in Saturday's game. I want to get that bad taste out of my mouth. I want to get some rhythm and some reps and something to feel good about. And I'll partially agree with Wolf. If we see Kyler on Saturday, that'll be the only reason why. It'll be the only reason why. Hey, coach, man, I hated how I played last Friday against Kansas City. Can I have a series or two?
I want to get that bad taste out of my mouth. Yeah. I want to have some momentum going in. Sure,
but it's the only reason why we would see him. I just don't see Kyler wanting to do that.
Well, maybe part of the reason they didn't move the ball that well is because there's not a lot of. It's not a lot of care. There's not a lot of care in it. There's not a lot of belief in that it matters.
That's exactly it. I don't think Cliff cares that much about how his starters do in the preseason. I don't think Kyler cares that much about whether he plays in the preseason. And so because of that, you're tasked with a job that you don't care that much about. Chances are you're going to get suboptimal results remember what Kyler said a week ago. Do you take anything from the preseason? This was Kyler 1 week ago.
I mean, it's not real. You know, I see it as like, go out and play well. It's not real. You play bad. You feel you got a bad taste in your mouth. But at the end of the day, you know, it's reps. It's live reps. So, you take something away from it. But at the end, like I said, it's not, you know, this doesn't count. So, I don't know. That's how I feel about it.
He doesn't care. He doesn't care. Look, I don't know, man. I don't know what I'm going to tell you. I don't care about these games. He cares more about practice. He's mentioned that. He gets a lot more out of a two-hour practice than he does going out there and playing and throwing the ball six or seven times in a meaningless preseason game. And look, I'm not one to... If he plays, I mean, do I want Kyler to play? From an interest level, it's better if he plays. But, you know, I mean, it gives me something more to talk about. But okay, we talked about Kyler, three series, they didn't move the ball. Does that mean that they're gonna go 4-4 and 13 this year? Doesn't mean anything.
No.
Doesn't mean anything. They had three series, they went 3-out. So what? So what? Oh my God, is the earth falling? It doesn't matter what he did.
Is the earth falling? Is it the sky falling?
Yeah, the sky falls. Yeah.
The earth is kind of already on the ground.
We'd all be in some bad shape if the earth was falling.
If the earth starts falling.
It's not on the ground.
Well, the earth is the ground.
Right, but could the earth not fall? The stars fall?
Well, I mean, we'll bring Sarah in for this
falling,
one. She's intrigued.
Falling stars?
It's what he meant to say was the sky is not falling, but what he instead said, the earth is not falling. Is that...
I was listening to something else I needed to, this is where I came in about 15 seconds ago.
I said the earth is falling. I meant to say sky, but the earth could fall too.
From what to what?
I don't know. It's weird. Like in the atmosphere, it could fall. Right? A star. You ever see a star, a shooting star?
Falling stars. I've seen falling stars. I've made wishes upon falling stars.
So if a star can fall, why can't a planet fall?
Like Jordan said, if the Earth starts falling, we're screwed.
We're all screwed. Yeah,
that's pretty much the apocalypse right there.
This sounds like a question for my brother who does the spacing.
Yes. Your mother's favorite.
Smarter, more successful brother in the Kizell family.
Your mom's favorite kid.
The one we've already established has accomplished way more in life than you have.
Yeah.
Laughing through the tears.
The only way the Earth falls is if we fall out of the gravitational rotation of the sun.
Is it possible that the Earth could fall? Yes or no? Just a yes or no question.
I'm going to go with a no. I'm down for a hard no. The Earth cannot fall.
Okay. I think it can fall.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll just
I said the wrong thing because I'm not good with those. What are those things called?
Metaphors, cliches.
I'm not good with metaphors.
Facts. Yeah. We should do our research before we start putting these things out there.
Technically, the sky is falling. That is also not scientifically accurate if I'm going to defend my co-host of 10 years here.
Oh, there you go.
Where did that even come from?
Chicken Little, the sky is falling.
Is that the origin of that?
The fairy tale or whatever, the children's story.
Yeah.
Chicken Little, the sky is
I'm singing a song right now.
I'm going to back out of this conversation.
It's probably good. I probably should have backed out of this conversation and not made anything out of the Earth is falling. That's probably what Jordan is thinking right now, seriously. We just spent.
I love the scientific talk on Burns and Gamble.
It really is. So it's our whole audience. This is what they come to us for, right?
Stumble into things, you know.
You might want to stumble out of this one.
Stumble out of that. Okay.
I want to just. So Earth falling, sky falling, stars falling. I don't think Kyler should play. I don't think he wants to play.
There's nothing
to
gain by it. There's really nothing. You make an argument that there's something to gain by him playing.
He wants. Okay. Devil's advocate here.
Okay.
It would be important for him to have a better feeling about how this offense is going to produce when they're all starting going into the regular season opener.
Does he seem like a guy that's lacking in confidence at all? I'm going to counterpoint you. Yeah. Does he seem like a guy that is mentally not
and he does not seem like a guy who needs the backing, you know, the reinforcement of a couple of good preseason drives to feel good about himself for this offense.
Did he seem like a guy that was all concerned that they went 3 and out 3 times in a row with him?
Not one bit.
So then he doesn't need this.
No.
I mean, he doesn't need it.
No. He doesn't want it.
He doesn't need it. Keep him healthy. Keep him ready to go.
He wants to be in the club of quarterbacks who just don't play in the preseason at all.
Yeah,
I really believe that.
Right.
And not because he's earned it and not because he feels like he's above it. I just don't think he sees the point. I just don't think. And I'll be honest with you. I think the only reason he played in that game Friday night was because it was on national TV against the Chiefs. And there was a Pat Mahomes versus Kyler Murray kind of vibe to it that made it watchable if you're a football fan, even for a preseason game. I think that's the only reason he played on Friday night. I don't think Cliff cares that much about it either.
And like I said, I don't think he doesn't want to play in the preseason because, I'm too good for that. I think he doesn't want to play because he doesn't think there's anything to gain out of it.
Yep, I agree. The Arizona Cardinals have a group of proven veteran players that they added this offseason, and one of those players is being singled out as a comeback player of the year candidate in the NFL this year. We'll tell you who that guy is next on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, time for the Vizzy Hard Seltzer What's On Tonight, brought to you by Vizzy Hard Seltzer, only hard seltzer crafted with antioxidant vitamin C. Proud sponsor of your Arizona Diamondbacks. What's wrong, Gambo?
I got to get through these 6 episodes, so that's not on anymore. The White Lotus. I got to finish this thing. Move on to something else.
Diamondbacks Pirates, which I know you recorded earlier.
Absolutely.
That's on tonight. It's already 1-0. And I know the Mercury are on tonight. They're taking on the New York Liberty. And I'm sorry, Sari, do you have a score in front of you? Because I didn't have
I do. 1 minute left in the game.
Yeah.
Merc are leading 101-79 over the Liberty, but it looks like Brittany Griner's being pulled off the court.
Isn't it some bad blood between to a player on each team? So is Skylar Diggs and somebody else?
On the Liberty, I don't know about.
Okay.
I think there's some bad blood between her and somebody else.
I was going to say that's on tonight, but that's basically over. But the Diamondbacks game is still on. And of course, Gambo wants to finish up the White Lotus so we can see what other very unsavory character on the show his wife compares him to. I can't wait to hear tomorrow which unsavory character on the show.
I admitted that I hate that all the characters are completely unlikable. They're all jerks. That's what makes the show. It's kind of a way.
It's kind of what makes the show. Yeah.
Yeah, and then my wife's like, you are just like that guy. You're a spitting image of him. That's you. Every time, like, he would do, that's you. You would do that. That's you. You would totally do it. That's you. You totally. So I heard 17 times last night how much I'm just like this guy who I've said is absolutely a completely unlikable character on the show.
Sorry. Yeah. So we started the show with a hug because of this. Do we need to end the show with a hug?
No, I'm
Do you need another hug? I'll hug you. You want Sarah to hug you? Jordan, he'll hug you.
We got you.
I think I'm okay. I think I just got to... Well, I think I got to breathe. Strive to be better because I don't want to be like that
don't
guy.
I don't want to be that guy because that guy on a show full of jerks, he might be the biggest jerk of them all. It's possible. Nate Burlar, so let's change the subject then to another TV show that you can watch every morning, and it's called Good Morning Football. And it's a very, very good show. And on it today, Nate Burleson, in fact, the whole round table with Kyle Brandt and Peter Schrager and Kay, they were doing the topic, who's going to be the comeback player of the year in the NFL? Nate Burleson went first, and on his whiteboard, he wrote the name of A.J. Green.
I'm going with A.J. Green. Yes, I've been talking about him since he left Cincinnati. I feel like A.J. Green's zone will ball out. What's the green zone? 40 and in, not the red zone. I'm talking about when they start sniffing that red zone, they're going to be able to look at A.J. because as you have Christian Kirk in the slot and then you have DeAndre Hopkins and the legs of Kyler Murray, defenses are going to forget about how good A.J. Green is. And if you've been paying attention to the headlines, what he's been doing at practice, how he's been training leading up to this season, he is in the best shape of his life. I'm saying that A.J. Green puts up 1,000 yards this season.
3 years in a row, he hasn't had 1,000 yards. Last time he had 1,000 yards was 2017. I was curious about this, so I went and I looked up Larry Fitzgerald. I remember us having Larry Fitzgerald on many, many years ago. And went to when Bruce Arians came in, they were changing him, and he was getting moved to the slot. Hey, and I asked him, are you capable of getting 1,000 yards? No, not the way I'm used in this offense. I can no longer get 1,000 yards. He did go 3 years in a row without getting 1,000 yards. And you know what he did? He got 1,000 yards, and he did it again. A.J. Green's gone 3 years in a row without 1,000 yards. Can he pull a Larry Fitzgerald and go from a guy who didn't have 1,000 yards 3 years in a row to getting back to 1,000 yards receiving?
Yeah, it's a good question. He hasn't done it in actually four of the last 5 years. So it's been very rare for him to get to those numbers. If he does get to 1,000 yards, Steve Keim should pull out a bottle of champagne, shake it up, and uncork it and spray it all over his office and whoever else happens to be in there. Because that would be a terrific signing for him and for them if he ends up with 1,000 yards. Look, I've said this before. I'll say it again. One person tells you a movie's great. Yeah, okay. And two people, three people, four people, five people. And before you know it, you're saying to yourself, I got to go see this movie. Yeah. Everyone's telling me how good it is.
That's A.J. Green.
That's kind of like what A.J. Green and to a certain extent Rondell Moore have done this offseason where whether it's you, whether it's Lewis Riddick, whether it's Nate Burleson, before you know it, if there's enough word of mouth about how great these guys are going to be, suddenly it becomes a movie that you want to see. Suddenly it becomes a movie that you, okay, I'll buy it a little bit more. I'll check it out. And if A.J. Green can be that guy, but as we said earlier, he can be in the best shape in the world. He can be motivated to have 1,000-yard receiving. He can be happy about being the number two wide receiver. Man, it doesn't matter if Kyler Murray can't see the field, and it doesn't matter if Kyler Murray's development as a quarterback has stalled to the point where he's having problems diagnosing defenses and what's going on in front of him. It doesn't matter how in shape A.J. Green is if Kyler Murray isn't in a position to deliver the ball the way he needs to.
DeAndre Hopkins put up good numbers last year with Kyler Murray not being able to read defenses. But like to get three, four guys involved, you got to be able to see the field. Like with DeAndre, I'm going to look left because he's one-on-one, and I'm not going to run him anywhere. And it's just one-on-one coverage. You throw the ball up, and DeAndre makes a play. But to get other guys involved, you're going to have to look off receivers. You're going to have to go through progressions and reads and all of that stuff. And that's the thing. Can Kyler do that? Can Kyler look and see, you know what, DeAndre's not open, but AJ is. I'm going to go across the field to AJ. So that's the thing. I mean, if you want to be, if you go look at the quarterbacks that have had you know, guys that, you know, multiple thousand yard receivers or three guys with 1,000 yards. Those are good quarterbacks that can read defenses, make plays. And so that's what Kyler's going to have to do. I think it's very possible that two guys get 1,000 yards and that Christian Kirk and Rondale Moore both have a big impact on the offense.
Yeah. It's look, Kyler physically, we can talk about his size. I don't have any concerns about him physically. I don't have any concerns about his ability to physically deliver a well-thrown ball to stand behind that offensive line. I do wonder about his ability to kind of process what he's seeing in front of him. And that's, we talk about third-year steps that quarterbacks need to make. That's the biggest one for Kyler, and that's what Josh Allen did in his third year. We go right on down the list of guys in that third year where the light just went on. I want to see the light really go on for Kyler this year, where it's not, you know, last year, the secret sauce to the offense was Kyler's ability to take off and run because it was just so indefensible at times before he got hurt. This year, I want to see Kyler Murray become more indefensible because of his ability to just see pre-snap exactly what's going on in front of him and deliver the ball where it needs to be. If that happens and A.J. Green stays healthy, I could absolutely see him being the comeback player of the year in the NFL.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I want to get to the point when the season's over and somebody says, hey, is he worthy of a contract extension? You're going to be like, hell yeah. I mean, yeah, pay him that type of money. You know, I mean, there was no debate with Josh Allen this year. Nobody in Buffalo is like, oh, I can't believe they paid him $40 million a year. Nobody's saying that.
Yeah.
In Buffalo, like, man, we got a quarterback that can win a Super Bowl for us. Best quarterback we've had since Jim Kelly.
Nobody is saying that. Diamondbacks now losing 2-0 to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Bases loaded, 2 out in the bottom of the fifth, and a wild pitch is going to, not score another run. I thought somebody was going to sneak across. They didn't, so Tyler Gilbert in his third Diamondbacks start was started off strong, got into some trouble. That game's on ESPN 620 right now. That's it. We're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow straight up 2 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a great night, everyone.